Our guest tonight is Russell Shorto, and if the name is familiar, maybe you owed his grandfather money. His grandfather, also named Russell, was a mob boss. Our Russell is not. He's sweet. He's a contributing writer for the New York Times Magazine. He's a prolific author of many books, including his latest, which we're here to talk about. The book is called Small Time, A Story of My Family and the Mob. Please welcome Russell Shorto to the show. Hey, Russell.
Thank you, Cooper. Nice to be with you.
How much of your history did you know growing up? Was it mostly research? Like, at what point were you like, oh my God, my grandfather was in the mob?
I think every family has things that nobody talks about that happened in the family, and yet kids somehow are aware of it anyway. So it was that kind of thing when I was little. But there was also kind of implanted in me this we don't talk about that notion. And I didn't talk about it, and I didn't really think about it. I think I was a very obedient kid who kind of blocked that off. And then, and I write narrative history, so it's a good story, and it would be one that you would think would come to my mind. But then what happened was several years ago, so it's my father's father was Russell Shorto. I was named after him. He was the son of these immigrants from Sicily. My mother's cousin a few years ago, I was back home in Pennsylvania, and my mother's cousin, who it turned out had worked for him as like a numbers runner back in the day, he said to me, what are you going to do about the story? Your grandfather, the mob, you know?
Right.
And he's the one that kind of broke down that wall. And I suddenly thought, yeah, that's a great story. Why didn't I even consider it? And then the next step was getting me to realize that this is, you know, I write nonfiction, you know, and I was like, well, those guys didn't keep notebooks, so what am I going to base this on, you know? So Frank, that's my mother's cousin, he said, he was, you know, was like pushing 80 at the time, and he said, come to my hangout, which was Panera Bread, and you know, we'll talk about it. So I went and I turned on the recorder, and I thought, okay, he's going to tell me some stories. One after another, these little old guys came out, and he had put out the word, and there was this whole group of them around me, and my grandfather, his generation, those guys are gone, but these guys who are now like in their 70s or 80s, they were then the young guys who looked up to them. And that was a whole thing that you know, kind of I found remarkable throughout this whole process. All these people in town admired them, looked up to them. It was very much of like a kind of a class thing going on. You know,
this whole
town felt that these guys were on their side. They were working class guys. They looked out for the working class guy. Italian, yes, but you know, ethnic people.
But it was an oral history that you ended up basically uncovering. That, thank God you did, because once those people are gone, those stories are gone.
And that's what I'm on a little bit, you know, I'm promoting my book, but I'm also on this little mission to tell people, explore your family history, do it now before it's too late, you know? So what I did is I got the oral history. I did hundreds of hours of interviews, but that wasn't enough for me because I write history and I want to, you know, footnote things.
Right.
So I then went to my dad was friends with the chief of police. He gave me a key to their archives. So I was able to roam around in there at the county courthouse, the newspapers, you know, going through the old newspapers. And I filed Freedom of Information Act requests with the FBI. So I was able to kind of put these stories, match them up with documentation, you know? So I felt like, okay, maybe these guys were exaggerating here, but they weren't here because I got it on paper, you know? So what I ended up doing is putting together a story of my grandfather, but a story of the small town mob in America. You know,
right.
I'm from Johnstown, Pennsylvania, but it was the same in Schenectady, New York, and in Fresno, California, like all over the country.
Right.
Did they have ties to the five families in New York and Jersey?
They had ties to Pittsburgh. And then I believe Pittsburgh had ties to New York.
Got it.
That's kind of the way it worked. And actually, it's more complicated than that because my grandfather was like the homegrown, he grew up in the local Italian, like pre-mafia, where they trained him with how to gamble and how to cheat at cards. And he got the prohibition. And
I want that training.
Selling hooch on the streets and things. But another guy came from the mob in Philly, and he kind of brought the franchise. And right. he married my grandfather's sister, and the two of them, my grandfather was had the local knowledge, you know. So the two of them kind of created the enterprise in town.
That's amazing. You know, I was telling Anthony earlier, I was excited to have you on. I'm friends with Gambinos here in New York. Uh-huh. And what's so funny is, so these are like it's a nephew and a grandson, and they're not connected to the Gambinos, but they are Gambinos. And the hardest problem they have in New York is renting apartments. Nobody will rent to them. Like wherever they go, you know, they're afraid to give their last name, but that's their last name. They're not going to change it. They're proud of it. But on the other hand, you know, they do have, they're actually literally living in one of the grandmother's basements because nobody would rent them an apartment in Brooklyn.
Wow.
See, I think it's funny about your story that your great grandfather grew up the 9 children in his family, and he goes from that to the mob. How does that happen? How do you go from a poor family with that many brothers and sisters to making millions?
You know, it was amazing when I was researching the mob while doing this book, and his life trajectory exactly matches the rise of the mob and of people. So first of all, you have the immigrants like your family and mine who came over around the turn of the century. He came in 1901, I think. They were they lived in a company town. He was a coal miner. They were forced to do everything that the company wanted them to do. It was incredibly restricted and discriminated against. But then the next generation, also very discriminated against, but they grow up as Americans. They go to American schools and they learn to admire, you know, the American way and all that. And yet they're not allowed to do it. You know, there's no way he was going to go to college or become even like, you know, a manager of a department store or something. You know, it was very restricted at that time what jobs they could do. So along comes prohibition. He's able to, and that's what they all did all over the country. They were making and selling illegal whiskey because everybody wanted it. So they took in this American ethic, like, you know, make a product, sell it, and you know, make some money. And then when prohibition ended, they shifted into gambling. And gambling was, I mean, you know, there was this incredible moralistic strain in American society, like gambling is terrible, and yet everybody wanted to gamble.
Right. Yeah, it's like poor
now. They slid right into that. And they took that basically from, you know, the numbers game was invented by blacks in Harlem. And they took that up from them and adopted. And so he did exactly what people were doing in New York and Chicago and also in, you know, Boise and all kinds of places.
So he was like an entrepreneur. I mean, I wish I had that kind of motivation now. It's amazing because you have to go with what your strengths are. And I guess that was a strength. And also, if you don't have an education, you don't have anything, you have to go with what they're doing on the streets. And that's what was going on. I mean, it was like joining a gang back in the day.
Yeah. And you, I mean, you know, I grew up with this notion because he did, in fact, do, which is a lot of what the book is about. He did a lot of very harmful things to my family, you know, with his personal behavior.
Like what?
He was a progressively a worse and worse drinker and a real philanderer and would have children with different women in town. And then he would decide, like this kind of medieval king or something, he would take the child from that woman and give it to someone else who was a couple that he knew didn't have kids. So this had all these, you know, and that's what, as I say, the book is about in many ways, because that is what rattled through my family, really across the generations, as you can imagine, in a small town. But, you know, I think they wouldn't have minded if he was just like a mob guy who ran numbers games, you know.
Right.
So there was those sort of two sides to his story.